Hi, I'm Andrew Smith, and you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
APT Services, the Marley at Who1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 419. This is a sort of extension of 418, because this week we have Andrew Smith on the show.
Yay!
Hello. Yay!
Hello, hello.
Oh yeah, we got Mary and Kirby as well. So, naturally, we're going to be still talking about Full Circle. Obviously, we did sort of review it last week, but it's going to be more interesting for us to have a sort of inside view. And I know anybody who listens to this show over longer periods of time will remember the Doctor Who panel at FantasyCon, of which Andrew was a part of. But this way, we can actually look sort of specifically at the foundations and the story and the aftermath of Full Circle. So I remember on the when you spoke to Ben on stage, you were saying about the fact that you submitted quite a lot of scripts to the BBC. Was that, or am I right in thinking they weren't just Doctor Who scripts?
I sent stuff into Doctor Who. I also submitted ideas to things like Shoestring.
Yeah,
and they were mainly storylines. I did submit a couple of scripts initially to Doctor Who when Robert Holmes was script editor, and then Anthony Reed. They got a script each that they responded positively to with lots of constructive notes and encouragement. And after that, I sent in two or three storylines, and I was sending ideas. I can't remember. I might have sent a script to Shoestring, but these series would I get nice responses, but these would be series that are around for 1 or 2 years. Yes. And then they go, whereas Doctor Who was always there. I mean, my first thing was to Robert Holmes, which would have been in, 76, something like that. I know it's around the time Talented Wang Chiang was on, so whenever that was. And then I was handy for script editor with nice comments, as I understand. And with Douglas Adams, Douglas invited me down for a chat when Creature from the Pit was being recorded in studio. And then Chris picked up the storyline that I'd sent to Douglas. Chris bid me pick up the story I sent to Douglas Adams, and which was called The Planet That Slept at that point, but which became, in the course of time, Full Circle.
So the fact that you mentioned Douglas Adams was a really good name drop when Kirby's ran, because I think, Kirby, are you not the United States' top Douglas Adams fan?
Not the top, but I have been every Thursday I post this must be Thursday. Just can't get the hang of Thursdays for 6 or 7 years now, every single Thursday.
he's so quotable, isn't he? And so original.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Hitchhiker is something special. And Dirk Gently as well. Big fan of Dirk Gently.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, I had a message. I thought it might be Debbie saying she was on. That's live podcasting at its worst. I mean, best. So this is an opportunity for you, Kirby, to sort of ask some questions about what Douglas Adams was like, really, more than just as a writer, as a person, or anything like that.
Okay.
Well, is that the question?
I guess that's the question.
Trying to sort of encourage Kirby to open his gob.
I had forgotten that you'd had a chance to meet him, so it hadn't occurred to me. So what was he like?
Very nice. I mean, I met him that one day. We spent the day together. And in fact, I always say my claim to fame is that Douglas Adams bought me my first alcoholic drink. It was just very encouraging and very friendly and very tall. Very tall. Because I'm 5'8", so I spent the whole day looking up at him, But very welcome. And I remember, he didn't patronise me at all. I haven't said he's tall. no pun intended, but he didn't speak down to me. That's something I took away from that as well. And my age was never a thing for me. I never mentioned my age. I was asked this once in an interview about 5 years ago by the Radio Free Scarrow guys. Did I mention my age when I submitted ideas? And it hadn't occurred to me. I didn't, because... Why would you? you know, you wouldn't write, if you're 24, you wouldn't say, by the way, I'm 24. And if you're, I mean, I think I was 14 or 15 when I sent my first scripts. And again, I wasn't saying, oh, by the way, I'm 14, by the way, I'm 15. So I was just submitting ideas because my age seemed irrelevant to me. It's made quite a thing of when people mention me getting started and whatever, but to me it really was irrelevant. But
can you think now? You look, say, you know, you think of how old were you when Full Circle came out?
I was 18 when it. Yeah. I was 17 when I wrote it, and I was just turned 18.
And you're right; it should make a difference. But looking, obviously, say, you know, you look at 17 year old writers now. I mean, can you put that into perspective now as to how remarkable it was?
Well, I don't know. I think I've been writing in one way or another for myself, really, for quite a few years, and I'd had a couple of things. I'd had comedy sketches on radio. And I wrote some quickie sketches for Not the 9 o'clock News and that kind of thing. I don't know. I mean, I was aware. It was kind of made a big thing. I did quite a few interviews, and including one for the Radio Times that Matthew and I did for the back page thing for the first episode in the Radio Times. So yeah, I suppose in that way, I was aware that I was kind of different from other writers, and I think John saw it as, you know, a newsworthy selling point, which I suppose it was. I'm not one to judge, really.
No, of course you're not, but I mean, it is obviously, it's quite remarkable.
Well, what I can say, I went on one of the things I did very shortly after Doctor, I wrote a play for television called Thieves with Michael Sheard and Elaine Collins, who went on to become Mrs. Peter Capaldi.
Oh, wow.
On that, Robert Love was the head of drama and is the executive producer on that. And I saw an item appear in TV Times while we were making it about this series of plays, and it described Thieves by Andrew Smith, age 23. And I was speaking to him, I think, the next day, and I said, where'd you get the idea I'm 23? He said, oh, they asked me your age, and I just guessed. I said, that's about right, isn't it? I said, well, actually, I'm 18. and he was fine. But we were halfway through recording it at that time. We were in rehearsals. And from that point on, the director totally patronised me and stopped buying me drinks. Because I remember we were at lunch together, me and the director, and he bought me a brandy. It was my first brandy I'd ever had. But that was, yeah, after he found out my age, yeah, I really got patronised. And just by him, not by anybody else. Because he was an old school director. I forget his name, but he's very old school and came in a suit and a shirt and tie. That was a little annoying, to be honest. But I got none of that on Doctor Who, not from Chris or not at all from Chris or John or anybody. I mean, I heard there might have been remarks from some people about the script by the spotty faced teenager, but I wasn't aware of any of that. You know, certainly nothing like that was said in my hearing.
So when Full Circle was commissioned, did you have to change any of the sort of any parts of the story to sort of fit the almost story arc that was running during that season?
Oh, quite a bit. Yeah, I mean the storyline, what had to happen was, I mean, a big thing was it had to fit in with the East Space trilogy.
Yeah.
Which is something I was told about when I came down for the script meeting, and which I didn't know was going to be a script meeting, because Chris and I had our first telephone conversation, in the course of which I became totally deflated, because he said to me, I couldn't possibly write for the show because I live too far away. It's impractical. I was living in Glasgow then. I felt very deflated at that. But he said, but come down and we'll talk about writing and what you might do and whatever. And then he clearly forgot that, because I came down, walked into the studio, Union House, at Shepherd's Green. I hadn't even taken a seat when he said, what we're thinking is we'll commission you to write a scene breakdown and script for the first episode, and we'll see how it is, and if we like it, we'll commission you for the other three episodes. At which point I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
I just totally was not, I was not expecting that at all. That was not something I expected at all. And suddenly, yeah, I've been commissioned to write a script, and so I then went and did that and had a week of really living on my nerves, just waiting for the phone call. Yeah. And then I got the phone call. I was in my kitchen at home, or the family kitchen at home, and got the phone call from Chris. We love it. Want to commission you for the other episodes.
And yeah, Kirby felt like that when he got the other Skype message that he was coming on this show about 9 years ago, funny enough. But I would have Lillian also, Robin, who's currently watching the live Facebook feed, says, hello, hello, Mr. Smith.
Hello.
Yeah, Andrew, you also wrote the book, the Target book, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, a couple of years later.
Oh, so that was a couple of years later, because yeah, it was a bit more fleshed out, which when I read it, I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was delayed, actually, because there was a Writers Guild strike. I was in the Writers Guild, and there was a Writers Guild strike. I think some dispute, I think, with W.H. Allen, who were the publishers. And so that delayed it for quite a few months. And and then I wrote it. And yeah, I wanted to have something that I wanted to be the kind of Target book that I wanted to read, which was something that totally evoked the TV series. So I actually wrote it with the VHS of the episodes next to me. And so I included some business, like in Romana's room, when Tom picks up this book and he's leafing through the book and he talks to Romana. I put that in the novelization because that's what I want. I want to kind of be reminded of. And then at that time, not everybody had a VHS recorder. Most people were still watching the program and then relying on memory and being aided in that. But with the Target novelizations. But yes, I did add some bits and pieces. I had Nefrid accessing the system files for the first time. And well,
in the TV script, it leaves the origin of the swamp people kind of vague. You think there's just kind of been an intermingling, but in your book, you give a really good explanation. You know that there really is nobody left from the original.
There's a sequence towards the end that kind of has the Marshmen returning to the marsh and communicating telepathically, empathically. And in fact, that's something I returned to and took as my starting point when I wrote a sequel called Mistfall for a Big Finish a few years ago.
If you write for Big Finish.
I certainly do.
I just listened to one, the Sixth Doctor and Perry story, The Emissary of the Daleks. And when I saw that Andrew Smith was the author, I thought, oh my gosh, I wonder if that's who I'm going to talk to.
yeah, that's me. That's had such a lovely reaction. Which is really nice to see, because it's my first. I mean, I've written Daleks before for The War Doctor, for John Hurt. So I wrote two War Doctor stories for Big Finish that were great fun to do. Emissary of the Daleks, I wrote for Colin and Nicola, who I love to write for.
Mistfall, wasn't that the Fifth Doctor?
The sixth.
Six, okay.
He's old 60, yeah, but I've written now, I think, for just about all of them. Haven't written for Sylvester, but I haven't done a Second Doctor story, but I've done stories for all the other Doctors. I've done quite a few for Tom now. And the sequel to Full Circle, Mistfall, was for Peter, Mark, Sarah, and Janet. And with Gemma Redgrave as a decider, that was nice. It was the first thing she did for Big Finish, actually, before she did Unit. And in fact, David Richardson, the producer, sent me the cast list shortly before the studio. And he'd never done that before. And I thought, by the way, I'd like to see the cast list. And I read it, and there it was. Yeah. Gemma Redgrave. Excellent. And she's great.
So, how happy were you once Full Circle had aired that it was, from your first concept or first idea of the storyline to what it was like at the end?
I was very happy with it.
Yeah.
You were asking about changes. So I had to introduce Adric
and
fit into eSpace. And the original storyline had the Starliner had just crashed, so the concept really changed quite a bit. We had a big long script meeting, and I went away and turned over ideas in my head, and then came up with this different story set in that, still with that same environment with the Marshmen and whatever, but fitting into this idea of a Starliner that had been there for quite a while. I was really pleased and felt really grateful. The cast were terrific. I mean, George Baker and Richard Willis and others, and having Peter Grimwood as director, you know, that was a huge stroke of luck as well, doing his first Doctor Who, and Max Sammet as a film cameraman, I think. Funnily enough, just this week, I mean, I've met up with June Page, who played Kira, for the first time since the second recording block in the studio in August 1980. It's lovely to catch up with her. And I met Andrew Forbes, who played Omril as well, and I met up with, and Matthew was there. Matthew and I have met a few times. Matthew Waterhouse. Yeah. And so we were kind of going over and reflecting, you know, that the looking at the film work, it's so good. And the way that the Marshmen are filmed, emerging from the swamp in silhouette with the light behind them, is, you know, looks marvellous. And that sort of thing flatters what's on the page, you know. I was really pleased with it. I think it's one of Tom's best performances in these latter episodes, you know. Matthew does a good job. And, yeah, I loved the fact that Richard Willis was in it. I knew Richard from a TV serial called The Feathered Serpent, which is excellent. I think I loved that George Baker was there. And George Baker was the loveliest guy. And he took a lot of time out to talk to me. And then wrote me a lovely letter afterwards. He's a lovely guy. But the piece of casting that excited me the most was Richard. Yeah. Because I knew him so vividly from The Feathered Serpent, which is a serial set in Aztec times, with Patrick Troughton as main baddie, funnily enough. Yeah, I feel I lucked out right across the board with Full Circle.
Excellent. So, obviously, you alluded to the fact that you introduced Adric, or you were told to introduce Adric. Mm. So how much of his sort of character was made up by you, or that was someone said, you must, this is Adric, this is what he's going to be like, work him into the script?
Yeah, I think a fair bit, actually. I had a single sheet to go from, and it said that he was, his brother was, on the single sheet, said his brother was the leader of a street gang, and he would die saving the Doctor. Mm. And that's why Varsh dies in Full Circle, though it's not quite saving the Doctor. But and for the street gang, that became the Outlaws. But the thing of the Starliner Society, his place in it, and the badge for mathematical excellence, again, was a creation of mine. And the Marsh Reed belt was kind of the badge that he had to earn from the Outlaws. And, of course, he takes Varshi's belt at the end of the story. At FantasyCon, I was actually asked, I think, by someone, you know, was there much of me in Adric? And I think there was actually quite a bit, you know. I was quite good at sums. And that's the thing. I mean, this badge of mathematical excellence, he became this mathematical genius, which was never the intention. He was good at sums, that was it. He's in a small community. The badge was just meant to suggest that he was fairly bright, and it's not explicitly stated, but he was someone who was marked out to as a potential decider.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It was never meant to suggest that he could do complicated mathematics, you know, in a millisecond, as it became. But
it was quite handy that the badge was made of gold, obviously, for a future
it turned out to be, yeah.
Alan T. Butcher says, and you may have met him at the convention again, thank Andrew for writing such a prescient, I don't know if that's a funny word, explanation of a Brexit process worth so long ago in Full Circle.
The word is prescient. The word is prescient.
Thank you. I can't read. So, and I'll tell you another fantastic thing about having a special guest on the show. It shuts Kirby up brilliantly. I think we should perhaps do it a bit more often.
Sorry, Kirby.
Can I come in with another
Please
big finish
do.
Question?
Please do.
Yeah.
What I want to know, Andrew, is now back when you were writing Full Circle, you were writing for a live cast. That had you ever met them or watched any of the show yet to kind of know the style that you wanted to write in? Because I wonder, for Big Finish, you're writing for different doctors, which involve different styles. And so I wonder what your process is that has you, you know, able to capture each doctor's style.
I think I've got used to each of them now. Actually, I mean, years and years ago, I think I was asked this, and I said, I don't think the Doctors are that different one from another, which is completely the wrong answer, because they are. they're very different to write for. And some of it, I mean, when I wrote the first Doctor story for David Bradley in particular, I watched the whole Hartnell era of Doctor Who in order.
That's what I wanted to
really immerse myself in the character of that Doctor. Although I had written for the First Doctor before, I'd done a couple of First Doctor stories before, but yeah, you just get a feel for them. And I really enjoy writing for is Colin, who I think is very well served in audio. It's almost become a cliche to say it, but his Big Finish persona is extremely popular, and it is lovely to write for. He's just such a presence.
Mm-hmm.
So I put my finger on it, really. But I mean, Tom is good as well. Tom, you can be really funny with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've written a story called Thaddeus Nook's Time Tours. That's not coming out, I don't think, for about a year and a half. But it's the most light-hearted thing I've done. It has a bit of pathos in it, but it's the most light-hearted, and it's the one time that I laughed out loud. Well, no, I've laughed out loud several times in Big Finish Studio, but there's a particular scene that I've written for that I think is the most comedic thing I've done. That doesn't involve a doctor or a companion. It involves two figures who appear in episode one and don't appear in another episode. But what the actors did with it, I don't know. But just to say, yeah, I went and did a very light-hearted story, and I think the fourth Doctor, I can't so easily imagine doing that with another Doctor, but with Tom... And his kind of playful character, it was really nice to do.
Well, then Peter Davison's Doctor, the fifth, must be the hardest for you to write for, because he's not very comedic or anything. In fact, he's kind of a background Doctor.
I don't know about background. He's fairly straightforward. I think he's I'm just trying to think how the best way to describe it. But being the youngest of that era, I think there's a kind of an almost naivety to that Doctor, and a willingness to please, and a fallibility, I think, as well, that you don't get with many of the others.
Because you capture.
But again, I've done two or three for Peter, and again, they've been great fun to do. The Starmen that I wrote for him is one of my favourite things, and
yes.
Mm. And then you get, you know, something like the War Doctor, which was problematic. Coming to that, when you think he's a character, we had this thing of you can't really call him the Doctor, you know, because he's given up the name the Doctor, you know.
Right.
So that was always a thing that we didn't, and you don't want him too many times saying, don't use that name, you know. But his character was such fun to do. But difficult, you know, he's not the Doctor really, but he is the Doctor, and there are some aspects of the character that you just cannot get away from, even in someone who has committed himself to war, to fighting, using methods that no other Doctor would use. But he still remains essentially the Doctor.
So, I'm sorry, I have to ask, but what is he referred to as? Because obviously I haven't heard any of the War Doctor stories.
Well, he is the Doctor. He's still showing in dialogue, he is the Doctor.
Oh.
And other people would call him the Doctor, but we try to have things where he wasn't called the Doctor to his face, because there are only so many times you can hear him say, don't use that name, don't call me that.
Right, he says it a lot.
Yeah, and I wrote a story called The Eternity Cage, where he meets a young lad on an alien planet, and the boy simply calls him Greybeard.
Yes.
You know, and that's his mannerism. And it wasn't too torturous coming to that. I just had this character, and he had names for the Centaurans that were kind of just what he saw. And so I thought, the Doctor's Greybeard. Mm-hmm. So, and the people who, the Doctor's in with a group who are trying to fight the Centaurans, and the others, kind of as a joke, pick up on Greybeard and start calling him Greybeard. So that little device was nice to get around it.
Yeah.
You know, not have people shouting Doctor all the time, you know.
So do you find, Andrew, that obviously Doctor Who fans being Doctor Who fans, sometimes they pick part of a storyline to its finest details to find something they can say, well, that doesn't work, or I don't understand that bit, or I've asked you for an explanation about any particular part of the story which I didn't understand?
Yes, fair enough. If people don't understand, absolutely, you know, happy to take the question. I don't know there's many people who actually pick things apart looking for things that are wrong. I
think you'll be surprised.
Sometimes people do. Yeah, sometimes people do miss elements of explanation. But again, that can happen, especially with audio, you know, or any kind, you know, any medium that can happen.
That's why novels are better than television, really, aren't they? Because you can actually.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I know there was something I wrote recently. It might be Emissary of the Daleks, where I read something and I thought, they've missed something. I'm just trying to think what it was. And I can't think. But there was an explanation in the story, but they've obviously missed it. But then again, you know, if you get asked the question, you say, well, actually, yeah, the reason is this. But you sometimes get people saying, you know, they disagree that, you know, this is a character or it doesn't fit with that or the other.
Isn't there sometimes an element that you like the watcher, viewer, or listener to try and, you know, get their own handle on a situation and decide themselves what the gaps might be, you know, but use their own imagination?
Yeah, I'm a big advocate of that. And, not spelling out every single aspect of what's happening to people, because listeners are intelligent.
Yeah.
And also just giving people a little bit to kind of fire their imagination and let them fill in some of the gaps as well. But if there's a detail that's needed for the narrative, and for me particularly, everything has to be logical. And if what's put in front of people when they're watching it, listening to it, reading it, whatever, doesn't support the logic of the situation, then there has to be more detail in there to explain why it's logical, why that would happen, why people would act in that way, etc. But it's nice when people get engaged, actually. It is nice when people get engaged and turn up at things and ask you questions or contact me on Twitter or wherever and ask, you know, probing questions, because it means they're engaged.
There was an instance while watching Full Circle when what character that got captured? The
Marschchild?
Marschchild, that's it, and it smashed up the lab.
Yeah.
And the next time we see the lab, it's all nice and tidy. Now, we had a little bit of a disagreement, in which case I said the lab can be tidied. There was another theory that there was another lab. And another theory that I had, which was a particularly good one, it didn't really matter.
Nefri gave the instruction for people to go in and take the body away, and I would think it'd been tidied up. Yeah, they're neat people.
Yeah,
they've got teams that are going around the Starliner all the time putting things right. So
yeah,
absolutely things would be put back in their place. So it was a science unit, and there was only one science unit, but
it'd be really that needed to be explained that somebody had come in and tidied
it up.
39
years later, I thought, oh yeah, I never occurred to me before.
Never thought about that.
I mean, all he did was throw things around. He smashed the screen, but we never see the screen again.
Then he wiped a load of stuff off a table, which, quite easily. A broom, a dustpan and brush, done.
Well, you're not going to leave the floor in a mess, are you?
No. Especially if that story had been made now with all the health and safety issues that...
And I'll tell you something about moving things around. I mean, I've mentioned this before, but there are photographs of Matthew and myself on that set.
Yeah.
Photograph for the Radio Times. And you'll see photographs of us standing by the laboratory bench, by the microscope, and with all the instruments laid out there. And there was a continuity woman there, as the photographs have been taken, watching us like a hawk, telling us to touch nothing, move nothing. And that's why I'm amazed to see there is a photograph where Matthew's got his hand on the microscope, because I thought we weren't allowed to touch anything. What are you?
Yeah.
Well done, mate, for getting away with that, you know. Yeah, she was strict. Don't touch anything. But yeah.
So have you got any souvenirs from the set or anything?
No, I did have John Brace, the effects designer, gave me one of the latex spiders that was fixed to my office wall for a while, but they perished over time. So I think after 2 years, it just fell apart.
That's a shame.
But that was nice. I've got photographs of it on my wall, actually, amongst everything else. So that was nice.
That would have fetched a bit on eBay.
Yeah, if it had lasted. But I wouldn't have ever. If it had lasted, I would never have sold it. But
no.
We had a discussion whether or not what the origin of the actual prop was. Was it a toy that was modified or what?
No, I think the latex pilots were molded and the other ones were made from scratch. I mean, there might have been a remote control unit within the spiders that operated the legs that was part of a pre-existing RC model, but no. I mean, I remember speaking to John about it on the set, John Brace. I don't remember too many of the specifics of it. I remember better speaking to him about there's a model of the Starliner engine that you never really see, but it turns up in CSO at the end of Corridor. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. I wish there were more of it. But the spiders, I'm sure they were made from scratch.
And there was a continuity error, speaking of continuity errors, where you look down that corridor and you often see that with the CSO, but there's one point where you just see the green screen.
You see the blue backdrop a couple of times. But I think, you know, to be honest, it doesn't stand out too much. That could be just a section of the ship. But it was nice that John went. I mean, because this model he made of the engine, it was a beautiful, beautiful thing with lights inside it that kind of flashed around. A bit like the Mentalis computer in the Armageddon Factor, for all the geeks out there who remember that. A little bit that kind of design for the lights, but it was. And it was a big old model as well.
And it is a very good touch to see down that whole length of that corridor.
It worked well. To make it, you know, obviously we only had the one stretch of corridor or whatever, and one side of the set. And it was worked very well and gave worked really well and given the impression of different corridors and different sections of the ship.
Kirby speaks.
Yeah.
And not before time. Hurrah.
Well, I have another Big Finish question.
Go on, Em.
Go on.
Big Finish seems to have a collection of writers that we see their names appearing all the time, including yours, which is great. And I just wondered, do you guys hang out? Are any of them your close friends? Do you share ideas?
One of the best things writing for Big Finish is like a big family, and it has opened up. You know, I was a police officer for 30 years, and then came into Big Finish, writing for them a few years before I retired, and I've been retired for 5 years now. And there are people who definitely become really good friends. And yes, we do hang out. It's very odd for a month to go by without I don't see someone.
Do you sometimes get stuck and you call on one of them to say, can you give me some ideas? I just wonder what a writer...
I don't know if that has happened. I mean, what does happen is when you're writing something, you've got a script editor. And, yeah, I don't know if I've ever been stuck to the point where I said, I can't find some answer to this. But sometimes what will happen is you'll send something in and your first audience or your producer and your script editor... And they might well come back and say, yeah, this isn't quite working, or this resolution doesn't work, or can you find something, particularly with resolutions, that might, you know, can you find something a bit more clever for the doctor to do, say, or that sort of thing. And they might even suggest something. And I do that. I mean, I'm script editing them myself. I script edited Star Cops, and I'm doing a couple of other things now, a couple of other ranges now. And that's interesting. That's a different kind of experience, but when I give a note, I will tend to suggest, you know, an alternative rather than just leave it hanging there. You know, not that the writer needs to pick it up, but I think it might help, you know, just to plant that idea. It's collaborative and to that extent. And also we will sometimes get together when, you know, there's a bunch of us working on something that's kind of a serial piece or a box set or something. We'll sometimes get together. Sometimes it'll be virtual by email or whatever, but
I'm
sorry?
You have to carry on a thread or themes throughout a box set and all, right?
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, we recently did an original thriller called Transference, starring Alex Kingston and Warren Brown.
Oh, I just got that.
I think we're all of it. And which turned out great. But that took quite a few face-to-face meetings and a lot of emails just to keep us all joined up and on the same page and keep the consistency and work out elements of the continuing story as well. That was an incredibly collaborative thing, and great work by the script editor Matt Fitton as well to keep that all together. And Matt Fitton and I, when the new series unit started, which was the first new series range that Big Finish had, we had a lot of chats with each other because there was so much pressure to get that right, you know, and Matt and I collaborated a lot on, because we were writing two episodes each and handing over to each other as well, so there was quite a lot to get right there. And and I've just done something, I script edited something, I can't say what it is because it hasn't been announced yet, but it's something that was six episodes that had been a series before, but it's now more of a serial. And that took an awful lot of contact and notes and things just to see that this serial story kept consistency. And we had characters and all across the episodes that were guest characters, but they were in several episodes and they had to be consistent, that sort of thing. So that takes collaboration. But so you've got the professional collaboration, but also, yes, a lot of it, we are friends and, we'll meet up for drinks, and typically Doctor Who will come into the conversation.
What process,
among other things.
Yeah. What process do you enjoy more, being like alone in a room and writing up your scripts, or do you prefer the collaborative process?
Well, story writing, I like doing that myself. I've never been drawn to the idea of like a writing partnership, and I don't really know how people make that work. But I like the collaboration with editors and getting that feedback from, as I say, your first audience, your producer and your script editor, it's good. But it's also good to get out of your room and go and meet other human beings. You know?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
And what is it like to work with Nick Briggs?
Great.
He seems like he's so much fun.
Oh, he is. He is. And it also, you know, he's such a good director and responds, so, you know, really gets engaged to the point. There was a War Doctor story I did called The Lady of Obsidian, where we had Louise Jameson in as Leela.
Oh,
there's a scene where she's a character who's been damaged by a time weapon and doesn't know. She remembers all her alternate lives and doesn't know which is right. And she's going over certain personal details of that to ask, you know, is this my real life or is it not? And there's people she's loved in this alternate, and she knows about loving them and feels love for them. And she's told by the doctor, no, that's not your real life. That didn't happen. And the way Louise did it, I was sat behind Nick in the control room, and I felt a tear forming in my eye, getting a real lump in my throat. I never reacted to performance in a studio like that. And then it finished, and we could see Louise through the window, and she looked at Nick and she said, how was that? And Nick didn't respond right away. And the reason he didn't respond is he had tears streaming down his face. He got a handkerchief out and was sort of wiping his eyes. And she said, do you want me to do it again? And he said, nope. he said, I don't want you to put me through that again. That was so good. Mm. You know,
she is good, yeah.
But that's Nick. You know, he gets so engaged. And it's full of great ideas as well. I mean, I'm writing something that he's going to be script editing and directing and at the minute. And we were on FaceTime, and he was so on the ball with the notes and things. We were bouncing things around. And at the same time, gives people absolute freedom to exercise their imaginations, you know? Hmm.
You guys are making me really want to go out and start listening to Big Finish. I've only heard.
Job done.
I've only heard like four or five stories.
Oh my gosh!
I'm glad I've heard more than that, but there's so many more that I haven't heard. There's a lot more that I haven't heard than I have.
There's a lot of titles.
At least there's something to delve into when the time comes.
Well, which brings up another question of mine. Mm. Their output now is so voluminous. I mean, it's hard to get and listen to all that's out there. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you feel the pressure, if they're turning to you a lot, they want a lot of scripts, or, you know, are they keeping you well employed?
I'm kept busy, yes. but sometimes it's been a bit too busy. But it's great. You know, you think of what you're doing. But at the same time, I think I've got better. It's, you know, just saying, well, actually, maybe I need to ease off a little here. But also communicating, you know, if you're getting snowed under, if you're going to miss a deadline, whatever, the important thing is communicate. Communication is so important. Don't just sit there. I've been on the receiving end of, you know, scripts don't arrive, but you want to hear from the writer. You want to hear, it's not with you today, but it will be with you, boom, then. I expect it to be with you, boom, then, you know.
Yeah.
Just that communication. But also, we've got new writers coming on board, and I'm working with new writers on a new thing at the minute, and it's great. We've got a lot more female writers as well, which is great.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, yeah. People like Una McCormack, Lisa McMullen, Helen Golden, one of our directors, is also writing for us as well. And once you start mentioning names, you think, who am I not mentioning? And you don't want to go on a list because there's someone got to be missed out. But
don't worry, we won't say anything.
It's good time. I will say as well, there's a lot. I hear quite a bit of people saying, I can't listen to it. There's too much. I can't listen to it. And da da da. I think it's got to the point that, you know, no one complains that, oh no, I can't listen to everything Audible has put out. Stop putting stuff out. You know. Right. Yeah, it is a case of, well, you know, accept, as I do, you can't hear everything. And it gets extremely expensive to buy everything. But the quality of it is good. And what I like as well is there's so much variety now, because we're doing things like the Avengers and Callan, the British Avengers with John Steed.
Yeah.
Them up here.
Yeah.
And we've just had Space 1999, which is an iconic series in the 70s.
Have to get Jenny Linden if you're doing some Avengers. Try and get Jenny Linden. I'm sure she'd like some acting work to do.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. I don't work on
She's
that.
She's got a great
range,
voice, though.
Yeah.
Have a word with Mr. Briggs.
Aye. Well, he might be listening. You don't know.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah. But, there's a lot of stuff coming out, and we're working from 3 studios. And in fact, there's the studio in Acton that we were at. I was recording, I think, the first Doctor adventures with David Bradley. And I think there were 7 studios in there. And on that day, Big Finish were in 5 of the studios.
Wow.
And at the same time, the Moat studio was being used, and probably the studio down in Kent at Wadhurst, where Tom records, is probably in use as well. So it's a busy time.
Yeah.
Do you have to sit in on the when they're recording one of your scripts? Do you sit in those?
Yeah, I usually do. I've been to most, and it's useful. Mainly what I, you know, there's an etiquette to this, and my thing is keep my mouth shut unless there's something that's actually just wrong, or an actor might suggest a change, or the director or whoever might suggest a change. But then you say, actually, no, you can't do that, because then that won't fit in with what's going to happen in the next scene or the last scene or whatever.
Lillian Robbins, says, I'm looking at the Big Finish website. I'm amazed at the number of stories Mr. Smith wrote for them. I'm going to have to buy even more. Alan C. Butcher said, Andrew was a really great addition to the Big Finish writing crew.
Oh,
that's good work, and you can tell much he loves doing it. I think I should say how much he loves doing it.
That's a very lovely thing to say. Thank you very much.
I enjoy it.
Did you see that?
I do really enjoy it, and pinch myself. And again, I'm doing a couple of things at the moment that are not Doctor Who, which again I'm almost pinching myself that I'm doing them. And again, things that are, you know, adaptations of series that were again part of my childhood that are just such fun to do.
Oh yeah, sorry. I was just trying to change the title of sidetracked.
Could you mention again the title of the one that you said you wrote that is so lighthearted?
Thaddeus Nook's Time Tours.
Oh.
Fourth Doctor Adventures. I think it's coming out in January or February of 2021.
And it's the Fourth Doctor. Okay.
It's the Fourth Doctor. And my next Fourth Doctor one is going to be in, I think, February. It's The Quest of the Engineer. And that's a four-part story. with the Fourth Doctor, Romana, and Adric in East Space with K-9, of course, as well.
Cool.
That was a fun one to do. They're all fun. They're all they've all got their the things that just, you know, there's a happy spot that each one pushes, you know.
I have to ask, though, back to Full Circle. I mean, I probably asked you last time you were on the show. Years ago. Were you aware that Tom Baker was leaving during the production?
No.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I don't think he'd made the decision at that. I don't know if he'd made the decision at that point. I think if he was leaving, it would have been mentioned to me.
Yeah.
I think. For that, I mean, I was on all three location days and every studio recording day, and I was at the read through and Chris and I were talking all the time, and I heard a number of other things, but I think if he was leaving, I think it would have been dropped into the conversation.
Yeah.
Or if it was known at that point, I think it would have been dropped into the conversation.
Obviously K-9's part was sort of being very thinned out as well during that part of the
I must say, in Full Circle, I've read things that people assume that John and Chris had this edict of kind of writing him out of the stories and asking the writers to find different ways of doing it. I've got to say that was my decision to have his head knocked off.
Oh, okay.
And it was a fairly early decision.
I love what John does
with K-9. At the time, you know, when it was This Is the Doctor Who going out every Saturday, I was not a fan of the tin dog in the TARDIS, I must admit.
Of course, you've changed that opinion now, haven't you?
I see his place. But, I thought it was something that was, and it's no bad thing, but, you know, I think something that was there to kind of pander to the very much younger audience. But that's fine. If you want to do that. But, yeah.
Now I'm embarrassed because Andrew, you and I are pretty much the same age, but I loved K-9 back then.
Well, so. A lot of people do, and I'm not saying I hated it, or you know, and I have apologized about it to John for knocking his head off, but we all have our preferences, I like the contribution that K-9 makes to that story as well, and I think it's beautifully filmed, actually, the sequences where he's going after the Marshmen.
Part of the reason why I'm fond of K-9 is because when I started watching Doctor Who, it was the season that K-9 was introduced. It's just part of my.
Well, you
like Doctor Who,
so you wouldn't really know much different, would you?
Right, but.
And the Invisible Enemy is a good story where he's introduced.
Oh yeah.
And then he's not. Again, you can see there are stories where it's like, oh, no, we're on a marsh planet, we're in a forest or something. It's not really. We can't really have him running around, so he stays in the TARDIS. And I think sometimes there are writers who just didn't want to write for him and just left him in the TARDIS. He had his place. I don't resent K-9 being in the show, but I think when it's actually current Doctor Who and he was there every Saturday night, I wasn't a big fan.
It's amazing. K-9's an amazing character, though, isn't it? You think about obviously that was the end of its classic sort of time, apart from a couple of cameos, and then to come back looking exactly the same for the modern era, and being in Sarah Jane Adventures occasionally as well. It's amazing how such a retro sort of character design sort of had that longevity, and even went off to Australia and they redesigned him. I don't really want to talk too much about that horrible series. I'm surprised Ben didn't ask John about it, actually, to be fair, but John got a couple of years work out of that one, though. But it's just an amazing character, to even though it's obviously not as an inanimate character.
It was great to see K-9 back in the school reunion.
That was
great. Was really firmly forming that bridge between modern Doctor Who and the classic series.
So watching that was how I knew I could fit K-9 in the back of my car to take him home after Fantasy Con. because I drive a VW Polo, and the car in the story was a little bit smaller than mine.
Gotcha. Right.
Yeah, sorry, Kirby. I interrupted you. You may continue.
No, I was done.
What? Surely an opportunity to be pedantic has passed you by.
Well, the only pedantic thing what the heck is a VW Polo?
It's a car made by Volkswagen.
It must be a British car.
No, it's a German car. It's made by Volkswagen.
Well, I'm sure you might get them in the States.
I don't think we have. Do we have them here?
Probably not. No, they're probably a little bit too small for America.
Okay.
Sadly. I feel we're diversing.
It's like I didn't know that a Ford Prefect was a car back when I first heard hitchhikers. Yeah. So.
It's in the 80s. I owned two VW Polos, actually.
Good lad.
Yeah, nice little runarounds.
They are brilliant. Yeah. I've had my car from brand new. Got it in 2003. It's done 120,000 miles. And yes, I'm very fond of it. Did you had a ride in it, didn't you, Andrew? Pretty sure you did.
I don't think so.
No, you didn't actually. No, that was Colin. No. It was. I'm doing
how
some name dropping.
Drive that car on the Isle of Wight.
You are.
Yeah. No, I bossed it.
Yeah. So anyway,
It's sold in Europe, according to Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, I'm sure everybody really wants to know about that, Kirby. Thank you for that.
So I'm kind of pedantic. That's my job.
Well, you haven't been particularly pedantic on this episode. So, come on, let's. How long have we got? We've got another 10 minutes or so. So Mary's been brilliant. You get a point, Mary, for actually asking some interesting questions. So well done.
I mean, this man sits in the area where I'm most interested. So.
You mean Big Finish?
Well, I tell you what, and it's always great to hear the love for Big Finish. I think the quality of it, and as someone, I just play my little part, but the work and the love that goes in to all the productions of Big Finish is quite something, and just about everyone right across the board goes above and beyond. The music and sound design, the sound designers don't get nearly enough credit and exposure, but they do a fantastic job. I totally agree.
You know what I find it amazing is how whoever the music sound design person is for each story, they so closely match the exact music of each era that I swear I'm listening to the music of the era, even though I know they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, I tell you, the story I did for the monthly range, Hour of the Cybermen, last year, where Steve Foxen did the music. And I've got to, again, sorry about going above and beyond. Steve went out and bought this equipment that allowed him to synthesize the music that was used in the 80s for the Cybermen. And the music suite on that is incredible. And what was very lovely was how many people responded to that. And were responding directly to Steve, saying the music on this is amazing, so evocative of the time, so evocative of 80s Cybermen. And we had David Banks and Mark Hardy playing the cyber leader and the cyber lieutenant in that story.
Excellent.
Excellent. And no question that that added to it. So if people listen to something and they like it, the writer tends to get a lot of that credit. You know, they don't like it, the writer gets it in the neck.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time you do feel like, yeah, but the thing is, the cast, the sound, the music, the direction, the input from the producer and script editor as well. I've done a lot to flatter, what you've done. And,
don't ever seem to put a wrong foot on anything,
Sorry?
I said they just don't seem to do anything wrong.
No. I'll take the word. No.
So I have to ask.
There was something I listened to recently. I wasn't in the studio, and there was something that was changed in the script, and it was wrong. And it's a factual thing.
Yeah,
It's not to do with the canon of a series or whatever. It's a factual day-to-day thing that someone got wrong, and it's I think I wish I'd been there now. I'm not going to say what it is.
Good, but, good.
You know, just every now and again.
Although Kobe will be asking these, you privately you know,
these,
afterwards.
These things happen. And it wasn't major. No one has spotted it. Absolutely no one has spotted it. So it's not important at
I
all.
I know somebody who might spot it if they get a chance to listen to it. Hey, Kobe.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not even going to tell you what it is.
So I have to ask, Andrew. Obviously, Full Circle's the only classic story you did. How'd that happen? How did you not do more?
Well, I was commissioned for Peter's first season to write a story called The Torsen Triumvirate, which is all I remember about that. It was set on Earth, and there were three individuals that had come together, maybe three pieces of a device had to come together as part of an alien invasion. It was in the modern day. I remember nothing other than that, and I don't have documents for it.
That's a shame. It could be a potential big finish script.
Yeah, that went to scene breakdown, which is a stage before the script. You do the storyline, and then you're commissioned for the scene breakdown, which is scene by scene, describing what happens in the scene, maybe some dialogue, but just boom, 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 scene, scene, scene. This is the structure. This is how, you know, this is how the narrative will develop and what's in each episode and how many scenes there are. And that sort of thing is very important for budgeting reasons. I was commissioned by Chris for that. And then I was dealing with Anthony Roots, who'd taken over as kind of a caretaker script editor. And then it just didn't go any further. And I can't remember any feedback, whatever. And then a couple of years later, I was asked by Eric Sayward. He invited me down and we had lunch. And he asked me to write a Centauran story. And I wrote a thing called First Centaurans. Again, I wrote storyline. I had all the documents for this, so I've written this, changing it a bit for, and I wrote it for Big Finish.
Yeah.
Came out about 7 years ago. I think it came out the month of the Olympics actually, and so July 2012 for Sixth Doctor and Perry, and again I'd written the storyline. And then the scene breakdown. And it's funny because the storyline I've got is four episodes, four 25-minute episodes, and the scene breakdown is the two 50-minute episodes. So that's obviously at the time when it was decided to change over to that format.
Yeah.
And then that got sorted. And I don't remember any specific feedback from Eric, just simply that they weren't going ahead with it. There was a lot of I've subsequently found out there's quite a lot of over-commissioning going on at the time. And also what happened is, instead, Robert Holmes wrote the Centauran story for that season, which was the two Doctors.
Yeah.
And it's the boss, it's the man, arguably the best, not very arguably the best writer that Doctor Who ever had.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with that, really.
Well, maybe Terrence Ditts could argue that, maybe. Perhaps.
But it was lovely to get a chance to write it, and it got such a good response on audio as well. It was lovely to finally, have an audience,
I did. I was going to say something and I completely forgot. All right, so what would be your sort of your redeeming favorite part of Full Circle, the thing that when you think about Full Circle that you gives you the most pride?
I don't know. I think what the Marshall brings to the story. I think the Marshall brings a lot of heart to that story, and the interaction between Logan and Kira as well. And the fact that it sets up some nice mysteries at the start, and then it's answers those mysteries in a nice layered way. So you don't get everything dumped on you at once. You get the reveal that the ship could take off, but we don't know how to fly it, and we're not from Pterodon, we're evolved Marshmen.
Yeah.
It's all spaced out, and it's a nice, just having watched it again recently with others, as part of a thing, because I hadn't seen it for a while. And that is a thing. I don't watch it regularly. I in the last 10 years, I think I've watched. Well, I watched it when it came out in Blu-ray, and I watched it for a couple of things, commentary things, and that. But having seen it again recently, I think that's something that I like. It's the layered way in which the mysteries are answered.
Yeah. Ian Kirk says, did Andrew say he had written a Big Finish story with Alex Louise? ? So I presume he wants the title of...
Does he mean Alex Kingston? I've written for Alex Kingston.
That's
playing a psychotherapist in the original thriller Transference, where she co-stars alongside Warren Brown. And yeah, I've written quite a few stories for Louise Jameson, actually. In fact, Thaddeus Nook's Time Tour, there's a Leela story. And she was in The Lady of Obsidian as Leela. And I also wrote The Sons of Kaldor, which is a sequel to The Robots of Death. I love that one because I'm such a fan of The Robots of Death.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written an episode for the upcoming Robots standalone series that was great fun to do. I was given a very, very nice setup for that. And Louise also wrote, Louise appeared in a Blake 7 story that I wrote called Escape from Destiny, alongside John Leeson, reprising roles from a Blake 7 episode called Mission to Destiny. And she played a main character in that, and she also directed it. Which
was
great.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, yeah, she spoke to me about directing last time she was on, I think. I think she's getting quite a lot of enjoyment out of directing things now.
Yeah, and she's very good. And she was in Survivors, which she played a character, Jackie Birchall, in that, which I contributed to as well. A number of episodes. Yeah. It's very diverse.
Yeah. Well, so that's Doctor Who for you, isn't it? Doctor Who and sci-fi in general. There's so many things you can explore.
Yeah, and all the other ranges. Yeah. I mean, it's good. What was good in Transference was I was able to really mine my police experience and actually used a couple of direct experiences I had in my policing career in that, because one of the characters is a detective.
Hmm.
So that was nice. Yeah.
And long may the Big Finish universe continue.
Absolutely.
I think it's kept Doctor Who alive at times.
Classic
when
Doctor Who at least. And you actually knew who's on it now as well, isn't it, with David Tennant and
there's a lot of new series stuff and some 12th Doctor related stories coming up very shortly, I think.
Really? Yeah, there was just recently released.
Fantastic.
And at the same time, serving the classic series well. We just had a Harry Sullivan story released that's garnered a lot of praise and a lot of interest and started quite a few Harry Sullivan memes on social media, which is lovely to see.
is that some audio?
I hate to ask this, but how do you have a Harry Sullivan story without Ian Martyr?
It was a short trip story, so it was I don't know who read it, actually. It would have been a narrated audiobook.
Okay.
Yeah, short trips tend to either be totally narrated or is a two-hander.
Wow.
Okay.
So much to delve into, isn't there? Big Finish. Really
yeah, I mean, I wrote an Eighth Doctor short trips that was actually featured the Lucy Miller companion to the Eighth Doctor.
Yeah.
And that was, although the Eighth Doctor was in the story, it was actually fully narrated by Sheridan Smith.
Oh wow!
And that was another lovely day in the studio. How great was that?
Fantastic. It's funny you should say that you hadn't seen Full Circle for a while. Though when you were at FantasyCon, you remember the big blue tent was there. That was playing on a loop.
Yeah. Oh my God. So yeah, people don't know. There was a viewing tent in the main hall. There was a viewing tent that was showing Full Circle on a loop.
Yeah.
Poor Rob Sherman. His desk where he was sitting, signing autographs. Was the one spot that meant he had a view straight in through the door to Full Circle.
Oh, lucky him.
And he sat on the Sunday in particular, he was sat there and he reckons that he saw Full Circle maybe five or six times.
Well, that's not quite how it was supposed to
ready,
be. Though.
He was ready to go postal.
Well, you should have seen the pile of DVDs I had next to the television. Obviously, I was quite busy during that weekend. I expected some of my minions to actually change the DVDs at some point. In fact, at one point, I actually did change it to Megloss, and somebody changed it back.
I know State of Decay was on at one point. On the Saturday, I know State of Decay was on.
It may well have been, yeah.
But yeah.
That's a shame. There's so many there that they could have chosen. But I deliberately put Full Circle on first thing in the morning. I didn't expect it to stay on for all that time, right? But
people seem to enjoy watching it. Yeah, but
I should have got you to sign the DVD. What a donut!
Thinking, God Almighty, there must be something else. I think Rob eventually went in and put the extras on. Just something different to have in his field of vision. Poor guy. Yeah.
Just watching without, obviously, with subtitles and so on. But. Yes, so I think I see nobody's now providing any more questions for this particular episode. So the trouble is, I'm watching this video on a monitor at the moment, and I'm scratching my leg, and my hand's bobbing up and down in a very worrying way.
Oh dear.
The trouble is, I'm getting this on a 1 minute delay, which is very embarrassing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so don't anybody who's listening to this podcast watch the live video feed. Very embarrassing. Anyway, thank you, Andrew, for coming along and entertaining us.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Some lovely questions. And, Adam, thank you so much for having me at Fantasy Con.
Thanks for coming.
My first time on the Isle of Wight, and it was absolutely lovely.
Oh, come back.
Oh, I'd love to.
Good.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing you when you do. Anyway, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right then, listeners of and viewers to the show. Now, there was a plan to do a review of State of Decay. However, it was State of Decay, wasn't it? Yes. Debbie Melrose is unwell, and it's her favourite story. So I feel rather inclined on this platform of podcasting to accept that we should perhaps do it next week.
To give her the option
and opportunity to blather on about State of Decay. However, we will be on next week, whether she's here or not. So that's just a 1 week setback, we'll say, for that one. But it's very nice to have Andrew on to fill the gap.
Okay. It was such a treat to have him on. Thank you.
Yes, and thanks, guys, for Mary, specifically, for being an excellent interviewer, and Kirby for shutting up for an hour for the first time ever.
I ask more questions than I normally do.
Yes, you do. Right? No, it's not quite true. No, it's not true at all, because all you're doing is... Oh, no, you just provide bits of information. You don't actually ask any questions, do you? Yeah, you're right, sorry, but...
I ask questions.
I did give you pre-warning that he was on this time as well.
Yes.
I've been busy. Oh, you've been busy. Okay.
I was wandering around a convention as an Ood yesterday.
Okay,
remember?
While we're still on air, you can tell. I did see a picture of this fantastic Ood cosplay. I have to say,
yeah, that
brilliant.
Ood head is beautiful.
Go on, tell us all about this convention. So you don't have to ask any questions. You can just give us some information about this convention.
Well, this is one of those. This is the Cartersville Comic Con, which Cartersville is a small town. Maybe 20 miles away from where I live.
Within walking distance, then?
About the distance between one end of the Isle of Wight to the other.
No, that's 26 miles, one end of the Isle of Wight to the other. And people do that on the 12th of May, around the 12th of May most years. It's called Walk the Wight, and you walk 26 miles from Bembridge to Freshwater. I've just given you that information just to show you what it's like. Carry on.
Anyway, this is one of those... small conventions where one meeting room where they have panel discussions, and it's mostly a big dealer's room. And it was actually about half of the dealers were comic book dealers. So it was a true comic con.
Yes.
Still, there was an awful lot of cosplay.
Pretty sure we had comics available at FantasyCon, but yeah, I'm sure there was. That's what we want to see at conventions.
A lot of regular science fiction conventions and Doctor Who conventions here don't have a lot of comic books.
Oh, they don't. Okay, sorry.
No, this was about half comic books. Lots of cosplay, some excellent cosplay.
Yeah, including you, obviously.
Huh?
Including you, obviously.
Well, this Ood costume was just kind of a last-minute thing that I decided to do because I was going through Amazon maybe 3 weeks ago, and I ran across a clearance on an Ood mask for, I think, $15.
Wow.
Going, hey, I ought to get this thing. And sure enough, I've checked, and you cannot get them anymore for anywhere near that price.
Well,
and
done.
It was, I did a little research, got the Geek Daughter to do some research too, to find a translator ball, and ordered that, which cost more than the mask cost.
Yeah.
And got a little piece of tubing, and I had the jacket and everything else, and put it all together about 3 days before the convention. And
yes,
I can't
well
tell
done.
You the problem that the tube is hot glued to the ball and to the mask, and it kept coming off.
Do they not have a cosplay repair?
Yes, they had a cosplay repair, but the tube is like a food grade tube, and apparently it's not designed to be glueable with hot glue.
Oh, there you go then.
So,
did they have any guests at this event, Kirby?
There were some comic book artists I didn't know, and some people who were there to promote some of the local haunted houses.
Oh,
so
okay.
no real guests that I know of.
But at least it's something that was on.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And, they had a costume contest in the afternoon. I was originally only going to spend maybe in 2 hours there. I went with my youngest daughter. And I was going to spend an hour and a half. And I hadn't planned on being a contestant in the cosplay contest until, as I was walking around, I had so many people stopping me and taking pictures. Complete surprise to me. I did not expect that. So I decided, oh, okay, I'll go ahead and enter the competition. So my youngest daughter didn't want to hang out to the afternoon, so I took her back home and drove back out, and it was fun to be in the costume competition, although just as I was called to go across the stage, the tube came out of the mask. And so I'm there trying to shove this thing back into the mask. I didn't win anything, but
so
that's
what did
not
win then?
Point. Huh?
What did win?
Well, lots of really cute kids. There were three categories. There was a kids category, lots of really cute kids. I don't remember exactly who won with those, but there was one really, really cute little girl dressed as Kiki from Kiki's Delivery Service, the Studio Ghibli movie. Oh, she was wonderful. Then I was in the closet cosplay section where you're putting together something, but it's not a lot of handwork. Who did win though? There's going to be a video coming out that I'll
post. Oh, good.
Post
yeah, we'll look forward to seeing that. And if any of the listeners want to hang on. If any of the listeners want to see Kirby's handiwork, you can join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which I've already said you can join. Carry on.
Then the final category was where people put like lots of detail work and sew the costume together and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the two main winners there was a wonderful Snow White costume, and also this woman dressed as Merida from Brave. They were both just fantastic. I'm hoping some of the pictures will come out. I didn't take a lot of pictures because I couldn't see. I couldn't operate my phone. So,
that's a shame.
Well, who took the picture of you?
Well, my youngest daughter took the first picture, and then I was just sitting down at one point, and I handed my phone to someone who was sitting next to me and said, could you take my picture?
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. So,
and then the selfies, obviously, when I took the mask off.
But it's fun, isn't it? It's fun.
Sweating like crazy. Huh?
I said, but it's fun, isn't it? It's fun to do cosplay.
I've
don't get to do it very often, you know. But I do intend to, when Portsmouth Comic Con comes up next May, I'm hoping to cosplay at that.
And I'm obviously doing it much more often since I
bet you are. We're talking about cosplay at the moment, Kirby.
Yes. and I did the
closet part.
The where I had been infected by the virus of the swarm.
Oh yeah, remember that one.
That picture with Louise.
Was particularly impressed with that. And Laurie Nick says, thanks for the free show, Adam. Well, it's normally free, Laurie. And she says, by the way, a cool T-shirt. I'm wearing a specials T-shirt, which from the Isle of Wight Festival a few years ago. If I turn round, you probably won't see the back of it. Oh, hang on. My foot's got stuck. Oh, I nearly got cramped then. That would have been embarrassing. Magic move. There's the back of it. It's just Isle of Wight. So specials do the Isle of Wight. Oh, God, legs got stuck again. Okay. So, like I say, anybody who tuned into this wanting to listen to our review of State of Decay, sorry about that. That'll be next week now, but we had fun anyway.
Yes, I kind of gathered that we weren't going to do State of Decay when you didn't ask for...
When Andrew was still on the show at 1:30.
Oh, okay.
And I think Ian Kirk sent in feedback, but I guess
we'll
you'll
use
have
it
to
next
see
week,
that
Ian. Next that week. Gives you a week off. Thank you very much. Unless you think you can think of something else, in which case we'll delete the old one and use the new one.
I will update the Facebook as well.
Yes, and say it's not my fault. It's definitely not my fault. We've got I have got the sick note here somewhere from Mrs. Melrose.
She needs a sick note, really?
Yeah. Or was it a sick message off Facebook or something like that? Anyway, we have evidence to support the fact that she couldn't make it this week. But we're on next week by hook or by crook, or unless I get a photo job that keeps me off it next Sunday. So, anyway, hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening, watching, and contributing. I was hoping some people were going to, other than you guys, were going to contribute a few more questions. But I know Ian and Alan did. Thank you for that. So until next time, thank you very much. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.